Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Hey, kids. Happy ho, ho, ho. Dear Santa, can you please Grinchify Bill O'Reilly and make his heart grow 3 sizes? Happy Yule, everyone. Radiant Saturnalia, blessed be on this glorious solstice. It's only a few days until Christmas and Hanukkah, and only one more day until Kwanzaa after that. Woohoo! I revile and denounce Bill O'Reilly and all his ilk, and in doing so, I am declaring, wait for it, ignorance on the wacko fundies who are wrecking my Christmas and the rest of the solstice holidays. Ignorance because these people don't know their Bibles and probably don't have the attention span for a history lesson. They don't even know they're celebrating a lie and the birth of someone most of them have never, ever, ever, ever heard of. Let's start with the fact that there is no mention in the Bible of December 25th as the date of Christ's birth. Zero. In fact, the two Gospels that discuss the Nativity both contradict each other regarding the year it happened. They do discuss shepherds tending their flocks at night, which they would never do in the middle of December in Bethlehem. First off, lambs are born in the spring, not in the fall, for the basic reason that all likely die off from the cold and lack of food. In fact, most people slaughtered most of their livestock before winter hit for food stocks and couldn't afford to feed them all and kept a mere few, not a flock, in a barn where it's warm for breeding the next season. Most biblical scholars agree the birth of Christ falls either in April or May. So why do modern-day Christians celebrate Christ's birth on a date that is a lie? Because they've been told to, and most have no interest in actually reading the scriptures from an historical perspective or doing any research on their own. Besides, torturing gays is far more fun for them than learning the truth. Even the book of Revelations is a ripoff of Zoroastrianism, which is an ancient Persian religion. So why the 25th of December? Simple. Mithras, the invincible sun. There is evidence Mithraism began as far back as 1400 BC when a golden-haired savior who is the son of God was sent to earth to defend humanity from evil and from the adversary Ahriman. Born of a virgin in a cave on December 25th when the sun began his journey back to light the world, he was to bring salvation to his followers and save humanity from sin. Mithras in his day was bigger than the modern-day Christ. Mithraism spread from Persia to India, Greece, the entire Roman Empire, and even China. Upon his death, he ascended into heaven in a fiery chariot. He was said to have 1,000 eyes, expressing the conviction that no man could conceal his wrongdoing from the God. Mithras was known as the God of truth and Lord of heavenly light, and said to have stated, "I am a star which goes with thee and shines out of the depths." Sound familiar? Even the Star of Bethlehem is a symbol ripped off from Mithras. I'm not making this up. Just Google Mithras and you'll find tons of info. So what happened? Well, a bunch of Roman priests thought they'd jump on the bandwagon, since 90% of humanity were already celebrating anyway, and basically hijacked not only the date, but the basic mythology as well. Why not? Their competition was a pretty impressive dude who vanquished the Bull of Darkness and had one hell of a party celebrating the solstice for an entire month. There are many Christians now who do not celebrate Christmas. Easter is the highest holy day in the Christian faith, but there are no presents, just candy and eggs and baseball, so consumerism can't be worshipped to its fullest. No money. You get it. Back to Dies Natalis Solis Invicti, or Birthday of the Invincible Sun, and the original winter celebrations. Evergreen trees were brought into the home and decorated at the solstice in all the pagan religions for thousands of years before Christ, even by the Norse. Mistletoe and holly wreaths were big with the Druids. They believed the tiny fairies which inhabited the forests would come into their homes and use the holly as shelter against the cold, blessing their homes in return. Ancient religions used holly for protection. They would decorate doors and windows with it in the hopes that it would capture any evil spirits before they could enter the house, kind of like a mousetrap. It was originally displayed by early Christians in Britain so that they would avoid persecution, but as Christianity gained a little dominance, they started to incorporate into their own religion. Is anything from Christianity original? Except maybe the cross, which is a symbol of torture and murder? The significance of holly berries changed so that they now symbolize the blood of Christ. So you're kind of getting the picture that Christianity is kind of a bloodthirsty sort of religion, even though Jesus, being a rabbi, was a preacher of peace. What happened? What happened? So basically, nothing about the Christian part of Christmas is true. And you know what? I don't care. I do care that the fundies have hijacked what was never theirs to begin with and continue to berate everyone who doesn't see the universe from their narrow, hysterical point of view. Having said that, Christmas is my favorite holiday. The spirit of Christmas is what I love. It's the time of year when everyone, other than Bill O'Reilly and the right-wing cult of hate, are kind to one another, even strangers. When everyone can wish everyone else happy holidays and include the entire population of the planet, because even the Chinese New Year is right around the corner, when people feel generous and no one gets suspicious if they receive a gift. After all, it's the giving that's the fun part. I love Santa's magic and how little kids believe. I love how grown-ups discover that magic again, only in a much different and more meaningful and deeper way. It's like Santa can bring gifts of love, contentment, and peace in that big old bag of his. I love all the corny Christmas music, especially if Frank, Dean, and Harry are singing them. I love Christmas movies, all of them. I love eggnog with brandy because rum is too sweet. I put our tree up the first weekend in December and I drive Tommy crazy only because there are no fresh trees available before then. I leave it up until Twelfth Night, even when it's long turned to kindling. I hate when all the presents have been opened because the tree looks naked and I know it's almost over. I love New Year's Eve. I love New Year's Day. I love all the holidays. So happy Yule, radiant Saturnalia. Blessed be on this glorious solstice. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Exhilarating Kwanzaa. Joyeux Noël. And Bonne Année. Ho, ho, ho. That's it for this week. I'm Tally, and this has been La Perspective Femme.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shine down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill and the weather. Love knows no season, love knows no clime. Romance can blossom any old time. Here in the open, we're walking and hoping together. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lake, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight we're having tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Trying to think of a short way to get through this. You might be familiar with Al Neuwirth, founder of USA Today. He's old now. They put him out to pasture, but he gets a column on Fridays where he talks about this and that. Apparently, he took his, I don't have kids, so odds are I won't have grandkids. But don't you kind of hate it when grandfathers or grandmothers go on and on about how damn cute their grandchildren are? Oh, just get away from me. But anyway, he's Al Neuwirth going on about he took his four of his grandchildren, ages 7 to 14, to see Chicken Little, the movie. And apparently the kids liked it, but the critics thought it sucked. The next day we read reviews, newspaper reports. Chicken Little raked in more than $40 million its first weekend. Audiences loved it, but over 60% of newspaper movie critics panned it, according to RottenTomatoes.com examples. A. The New York Times' A.O. Scott. It has the distinction of being a terrible movie. B. The Washington Post's Stephen Hunter, while calling it witty, added, "The film chooses family values over sheer nihilism." Drat, I hate when that happens. Webster says, "Nihilism, I guess nihilism, is a viewpoint that traditional values of life are unfounded, that existence is senseless and useless." Our kids booed that idea. And the bad reviews, they asked how anyone could write such stuff in newspapers. I explained to them about the First Amendment and a free press. Karina, our 8-year-old third grader, offered this suggestion. Maybe their newspaper bosses should make these old people take a kid along with them that when they go to a movie, to help them understand it before they write about it. So, Al Neuwirth, in his quest to be fair, funny how that fair word keeps coming up, he asked Roger Ebert if he wanted to make a comment on the wisdom of taking a kid to the movies to have him explain it to the old guy. Roger Ebert replied, "Is there any other beat on the paper besides film criticism where Al believes the reporter should take along a kid to help them understand? How about the White House?" I like it. Roger Ebert, I think, thinks about Bush about like I do. Letter to the editor. Newhart's column, "Shatter Silence on Iraq, Bush Administration." Ever since 9/11, it seems to me that members of the mainstream news media have been unwilling to post anything at all critical about the intentions and responsibilities of Bush and his cohorts relative to the start of the unjustified invasion of Iraq. What a turnaround it was to read Al Neuwirth's column. Neuwirth writes that Bush, Cheney, and Rummy were hell-bent to invade Iraq, reasons be damned. They are, he correctly argues, major league make-believers regarding their claims, what others would label out-and-out lies. The media failed to pursue the responsibility to our democracy by not informing the public about the grave peril these leaders pose to our culture. If we do not take seriously the claims that Neuwirth has made and demand a thorough public examination of every word and action of these liars, we'll find ourselves continuing the current movement towards a fascist form of government. Norman Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, Geneseo, New York. Norman, you are correct. These fascist bastards have gotten away with bloody murder because the press went to sleep, and you're right on calling the USA Today on it because they are pro-war whores. They are pro-Bush whores. They will say anything to make Bush look better. They will keep every fact that proves that Bush is a lying moron out of the newspaper to protect him. They feel that that's their job. Their job is not the truth. Their job is not responsibility. Their job is not to keep an eye on the federal government. Their job is to make Bush look good. That sickens me. Irresponsible journalism, says the next letter. Al Neuwirth makes a variety of points that deserve a response. Joe Wilson did not tell the truth about Bush's trickery. In fact, Wilson reported that the former prime minister of Niger said he met with the Iranian delegation and felt that the Iraqis were looking to acquire uranium. Well, if this guy had a feeling, that's good enough to send 2,000 soldiers to their death, right? I mean, if the Iraq didn't ask about it, if they just gave off this aura that the prime minister of Niger got a feeling for, well, that's good enough reason to start a world war and become hated by every other country in the world, kill 2,000 soldiers, maim up to 40,000 more. That's okay. Neuwirth says he has no proof that Cheney coached Scooter Libby about anything. To imply this is irresponsible journalism. Oh, true, true. Because When a lower member of the team does something, we must assume he was not ordered to. We must assume that Libby took all this on his own initiative. That Libby, they said Libby is Cheney's Cheney. That Cheney has Libby do everything. You know, the way that Bush has Cheney run everything. Cheney's running the country for Bush. They say Libby ran things for Cheney. So the idea that Libby got caught after swearing 5 times he didn't do it, now he got caught, they proved he was lying. So it must have nothing to do with Cheney, even though he was handling, he was Cheney's chief of staff. North writes that Valerie Plame once served as a covert operative. Once served meant she was no longer covert. So if she's no longer covert, how could she be outed? Well, you can only ask the CIA. They referred it to the Justice Department because they felt she was outed. Now, maybe this guy, L. David Mills from the Villages in Florida, he's a diddle monkey who knows more about the CIA than the CIA. So we just have to accept that. Neworth writes that outing a covert agent is against the law, but he conveniently fails to mention it to be against the law. Outing a covert operation must be intentional. Oh, yeah, like they accidentally called up that Matt Cooper and Judith Steno Jude and all them others. That was an accident. They let it slip. Funny how Libby accidentally let it slip to Cooper, and Karl Rove accidentally let it slip to Judith Miller. And then Judith Miller said, darn, she couldn't quite remember who gave her the biggest story of her entire career. 2 years ago, anyone ever heard of Judith Miller? No. She became a household name because of the biggest story of her life, and she can't remember where she got it. I'll be darned. The fact that the independent prosecutor indicted no one for the alleged outing is proof to me that he had no evidence to show that the so-called outing was intentional. Aha! I've been waiting for this to come up. So the fact that he didn't charge anybody with leaking meant that they're innocent of that. You ever heard of Jose Padilla? Jose Padilla is the fellow they charged, well, they insinuated, they spoke about him as preparing the dirty radiological dirty bomb, whatever that's called, that he's going to blow up the world with his dirty bomb. But when they were forced by the judges to charge him with something, they charged him with traveling and speaking. He traveled to somewhere, Afghanistan or something, and he spoke against Bush. So traveling and speaking, according to the Bush administration, are the same thing as plotting to set off a dirty bomb. Now, funny how it... See, I'm the type of guy, I like to think I see things fairly. I kind of do, you know, I'll be square if I can. If it works for Libby, then it has to work for Padilla. If it doesn't work for Libby, then it doesn't work for Padilla. So either Padilla is innocent and you're holding him for traveling and speaking, or Libby is guilty. You have to make up your mind, but you can't cherry pick. You can't say, well, in Libby's case, he didn't charge with that because he didn't do it. In Padilla's case, oh, there's a whole bunch of reasons. Well, no, you either get it or you don't. If you're going to charge a man with a crime and not use that charge in the crime, either he did it or he didn't do it, but you don't get to cherry pick your way out of that. You, sir, must be a monkey. L. David Mills, The Villages, Florida. Two more quick points he's got. Neworth compares this case with problems encountered by Nixon and Clinton. This comparison implies that Bush must be trying to cover up something. Well, yeah, duh. Why do you think he fought tooth and nail to prevent the 9/11 Commission from even existing? And then when he got forced into it, he refused to speak under oath. He refused to speak without Uncle Dick on his side. He refused to speak with any kind of recording device or note-taking or cameras or recorders or anything. Of course he's got something to hide. Do the innocent go way out of their way to fight hard to prevent something from happening, and then when they're forced into it, when they're shamed into it by their own party, then they want to be off the record, not under oath. I got to have my friend Uncle Dick there to hold my hand while I lie to you. It was legal for Bush to lie during the 9/11 hearings. They made that legal. They intentionally, specifically, went out of their way to make it legal for Bush to lie. And this guy says, oh, that implies he's trying to cover up something. Well, duh. Bush has not been implicated in anything after 2 years of investigations by the independent counsel. Please. Fitzpatrick didn't get to do anything for 2 years. For a year and a half of that, he sat there waiting for Cooper and Jude to talk. And remember, they weren't trying to protect a source. They were protecting the government that was committing the crimes. Remember Watergate? How they protected their source because he was blowing the whistle? It's all changed now, and Woodward's part of it. Now it's their job to help the government lie us into a war so Bush can steal $150 million a day. Funny how things change. Closing up for L. David Mills. If the Iraq War was started by a White House spin and there's no reason for us to be there, why did Clinton bomb Baghdad in 1998 for the purpose of attacking such weapons programs? And weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq after our invasion. I don't think so. A small amount of sarin gas was found attached to the warheads of some bombs. Well, gee, could you put a few more qualifiers on that? How small is a small amount of sarin gas? And it was attached to the warheads of some bombs? Gee, could they be from, oh, I don't know, the 80s? Could this be the sarin gas that Rummy sold him? Jesus Christ, that's not what you call weapons of mass destruction, dude. The idea that a small amount of sarin gas was found attached to some bombs, that's a little different than the mushroom cloud, the imminent mushroom cloud. If we don't invade right now, gotta invade right now, because if we don't, we may find the bad news in the form of a mushroom cloud. I don't think a small amount of sarin gas was found attached to the warheads of some bombs from the 80s that they bought from Rummy were that big a threat. So, L. David Mills, The Village of Florida, thy name is Horror.
Is that you, Santa Claus?
Gifts I'm preparing for some Christmas sharing, but I pause because hang in my stocking, I can hear a knocking. Is that you, Santa Claus?
Former Beatle John Lennon was killed here in New York City 25 years ago tonight. Today, to mark the occasion, New Yorkers gathered around a now famous spot in New York's Central Park, Strawberry Fields, where the word Imagine is literally set in stone, to remember the musician who made his home in this city. Tonight, from our archives, we wanted to show you, perhaps remind you, how viewers of NBC heard the news that night while watching the following conversation on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
The first scenes were Gone with the Wind filmed. Flames and burning of Atlanta sequences light the sky for miles.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from NBC News. Former Beatle John Lennon is dead. Lennon died in a hospital shortly after being shot outside his New York apartment tonight. A suspect is in custody but has not been identified. Again, John Lennon is dead tonight of gunshot wounds at the age of 40. We now return to The Tonight Show.
I'll tell you, everything in the world you'd ever want to know about memorabilia, the movies, is in this calendar.
You're right.
That's how it happened. That bulletin came from longtime NBC News staff announcer Fred Facey. Johnny and Ed, of course, were on tape, and so the frivolity continued on The Tonight Show that night as millions watching absorbed the news that John Lennon was dead 25 years ago tonight.
It was 25 years ago today that former Beatle John Lennon was shot and killed, and tonight there is a huge turnout here in New York at the Strawberry Fields Memorial in Central Park, just across the street from where Lennon lived and died. Here's our report from Jim Axelrod.
All you need is love.
The people remembering John Lennon in Central Park today reminded us again that the markers in life are so often deaths.
I was on my way home from work and heard the news that he had been shot.
Lennon's death is one of those rare events freezing forever a time and place. If you're over 35, you know exactly where you were when you heard the news.
I rode the Staten Island Ferry for a few hours that night.
The tears John Lennon produced in life were those of teenagers all hopped up on twisting and shouting.
All we are saying,
the tears in death,
is give peace a chance,
were for the poet, the activist, the revolutionary.
He wanted us to debate the issues of the time till we got red in the face and dry in the mouth.
25 years has a way of rounding the edges. Yoko Ono, then the shrew who broke up the Beatles, now just a widow. The caption today, where did a quarter century go? Granted, John Lennon wasn't John F. Kennedy, but remember this. Half the population wasn't even alive when Kennedy was shot. And for a lot of those people, this apartment building on the Upper West Side of Manhattan is their Dallas.
For a lot of the young people of today who are in their 40s or 50s, John Lennon's murder was the first tragic thing that happened in their lives.
Like JFK's death, Lennon's is shrouded in two words that will always linger. What if?
Would have you ever written with him again? I think, you know, it would have been quite possibly so, yeah. I think each of us recognized that we were good together.
Everybody's favorite subject is torture. Oh, goody. We get to talk about it some more. And I know this is going to cost me subscribers. I've lost pillars over this. And I sure as hell don't understand why. It seems to me that it is so obvious. By the end of this segment's like 7 minutes long. By the end of this segment, if you disagree with me, before you cancel your subscription, would you please just write to me and say why? And if you say, because you're crazy torture boy, well, then makes me wonder why you would subscribe in the first place. I think I'm just as fucking right as I can be on this. And all I get is, no, you're not. I can't get a reason why. You know, it would be real nice if we could have the discussion like adults. And if someone could say, Bart, your first point is wrong and here's why. Your second point is wrong and here's why. But I don't get that. I get this fantasy wacko nut job stuff. But all I'm asking, if you disagree, say so. Say why. Got a letter from Bob. Said, Bart, I think this is a valid contribution towards your discussions on torture. Well, already, I don't know. Have we had any valid discussions on torture? It's been pretty much, Bart loves torture, and I say, no, I don't. And you say, yes, you do. I don't think we've gotten past that part yet. But Bob says, how would you respond to TR's points about the 10-minute problem? And I briefly, oh, Bob's from London, if that makes a difference. I briefly looked at this article that he sent to me. Let me see where it's from. It was a Yahoo article. They talk about this ticking time bomb, which everybody sees as the big joke. You know, I've gotten 15 of those. Oh, Bart, what are you on, 24? Is that where you live, Bart? Are you Jack Bauer? You know, I got so many of those, which all it does is ignore the discussion. If you can't stand the heat of the discussion, then you shouldn't be involved. Then why not write me about something else? That is so pointless and useless to ask if I think that I'm a secret agent. Well, no. But the last Denny Crane, I really like the Denny Crane show, known to some as Boston Legal. But on the last one of those they had, now I'm going to cut some corners here. I'm not misrepresenting what happened. Now I'm saving time because I could explain why she was in the store. But trust me, one of the lawyers, one of the rich, white, wealthy lawyers, one of the partners, or maybe she's up for partner, was babysitting a friend's child at the department store. And I don't have kids. I don't know how this works, but they're walking through the store and she sees something, a dress or something. She looks at it and then she looks down and the kid's not there. So she starts screaming, Bobby, Bobby, are you here? And in a rare bit of quick thinking, I mean, sure, TV characters have the luxury of having script writers, etc., but it rarely makes it to the screen. But the second she realizes this kid's gone, she says in a very damn loud voice, I'm looking for Bobby. He's whatever, 5 feet tall, he's 12 years old, he's got a red jacket on, somebody help me quick, every second counts. And like I say, I like David E. Kelly, that was great writing, because that's, I remember that scene, and if I'm ever with some 10-year-old that disappears, I'm going to remember to start screaming. You know something, I always tell Mrs. Bart, if you ever get in trouble, start breaking laws. If you're in some store, if you're in some dark alley, yeah, you're in trouble. But if you're in some kind of public place, start breaking laws. If you're in a Sears store and something, you know, some guy's grabbing your butt or whatever, I don't know, trying to pull you out the door or whatever, start screaming and breaking shit and knocking shit over. Everyone's going to say, hey, what the hell's that about? I told her, if you're on the street somewhere and there's a problem, you know, throw a brick through a window. Set off some alarms. If you're in your car and there's a problem, crash into somebody. Crash, just zoom out there in the intersection. Run into somebody. All of a sudden, you got 1,000 people looking at you, you know, but anyway. So that's what this lady did. She started screaming, help, help. I got to find this kid, little Timmy or Bobby, whatever is missing. Somebody help me. Then they go to commercial. When they come back from commercial, she's talking to the FBI. The FBI fella tells her, the boy was snatched by a pedophile. We have it on tape. We know who the guy is. His name's Bob Jones. Sorry, Bob Jones, if you listen to this. But he's a known pedophile. And also, in a dumb thing, they confused. They seem to suggest that pedophiles murder. Now, I don't think that's the case. Obviously, they can. But I think a pedophile is someone who has a sexual interest in children. But they seem to suggest pedophile equals murder. But that's sidebar. But what they told this lady, they said, you know, in effect, because you weren't as attentive as you should have been at the store, this kid is now in the hands of a sexual predator, and the last time he grabbed a kid, we found him dead 5 days later. So where are we going with this? This started out, Bob, he didn't ridicule, he was nice about it, but he asked about the 10-minute problem, which is what the liberals do when they want to ridicule. And again, I am not pro-torture, I am pro-realist. Anyone who disagrees with me, now let's rephrase that. So far, people who have disagreed with me on this subject have failed to answer the damn simple question. But here we go. This kid is missing. He is in, this is where your 10-minute, granted it's not an atomic bomb about to go off in New York any second. Granted, it's not that big. It's only a 10-year-old boy who's about to be raped and murdered on this lady's watch. So she's as invested in this as she can be. So the FBI guy explains to her, we know for a fact, without a doubt, without any doubt in 100,000, we know this Bob Jones pedophile has stolen this kid. We got him on tape. We recognize him immediately. He's a known pedophile, etc., etc. They know for a fact. When the torture subject comes up, he goes, how do you know for sure? Well, we know for sure. You understand? If they got a videotape of a pedophile pulling this kid out of a store, I think it's safe to assume that pedophile stole the kid. But again, liberals, they like to ignore that. They don't want to look at it. So the FBI guy tells her, the pedophile's got the kid. He'll probably be dead in 72 hours. And she says, well, go do something. He said, well, we don't know where he lives. We don't have his address. All we know is he has the kid for sure. Now, he's got a brother in town. We think the brother knows where his brother is staying. So, in other words, we think we know that this man knows where his brother is holding the child. But he refuses to talk. Okay, now, here's where the big fantasy. This is why it's on TV. Now, we take a turn for the silly. He says, I can't do anything. My hands are tied. But if I were to put my badge down here on the desk and turn my back and you were to steal my badge and go to this person's house whose brother, the pedophile, has the kid for sure, and you're not bound by the same laws I am. If you went there and, say, threatened a guy, or then I don't think they ever got to the word torture, but you know, if you went there and threatened a guy, he might tell you where the guy is. So that's what they did. Her and a partner, another guy is up for partner. They grabbed two badges and went to this fella's house who has the brother, and they kind of slapped around a little bit and said, tell us where your brother is, or we're going to throw you in a jail. We're with Homeland Security. You'll never see daylight again, et cetera, et cetera. And the way I remember it, that's my big caveat here, the way I remember it, they gave him that information. No. He told them that a priest had the information. So they went and talked to the priest and pulled the same trick on him. Bottom line, they found the kid. They saved the kid's life. Because they were willing to break the law. When we get in these arguments with the liberals, they say, oh no, you can never ever torture, never ever ever ever. And my point is, if they got your 10-year-old son and you've got pretty much a guarantee he's going to be raped and murdered, well, he's going to be raped for 3 days and then murdered, and you're going to sit there in your liberal piety and tell me, Bart, it's always wrong to torture, no matter what, always, always, always. Yeah, you're going to look your 10-year-old in the eye and say, sorry, son, you're going to be raped and murdered because I have principles. See, now that's the only time we disagree. Is torture wrong? Of course it is. Is torture as wrong if you're going to save a 10-year-old from being raped and murdered? No, it's not as wrong as it was a minute ago. See, that's the difference here. We're not talking about yes and no. We're talking about the difference between 99 and 100. And again, if I could one time get someone to argue with me on that basis, of course torture is wrong. But is it wrong in every single case? I say no. You say yes, but somehow that makes me George Bush the Third. And that kills me that, in my opinion, the anti-torture argument is so weak that your only way out is to accuse me of being Bush's clone. I think that's crazy. But, and I know we went a long way with this, The only point I'm trying to make is Bob challenged me to discuss the 10-minute problem. When I skimmed through the article, it said, only once in history has the 10-minute problem ever presented itself. Well, then fine. Then nowhere in recorded history does Bart say we need to torture somebody. I'm not standing here with a cattle prod in my hand looking for a reason to use it. That's not what we got here. But I'm saying if it was your kid that they had, you know, and it's easy to say, torture's bad, but no, not when it's your kid. There are different rules. This gets back to Michael Dukakis when they said, if they raped and murdered your wife, Mr. Dukakis, would you want the man killed? And the correct answer to that is, you bet your ass I'd tear that bastard apart with my bare hands. But no, like a good liberal, Dukakis said, oh, it's always wrong. And that made him look like he don't even love, he loves the rapist murderer more than his wife. That's how he lost the, what was it, 88 election. Because Michael Dukakis was so worried about protecting the rapist murderer that he threw his wife to the dogs. That's why we're losing elections, because the Republicans are seen as tough on crime, and the Democrats are so worried that what if Osama's lip gets cut while we talk to him? Oh, it'll be so awful. That's torture, and we can't. We'd rather lose New York and L.A. than give Osama a bloody lip. Now, see, I disagree with that. I say, F Osama. Let's give him a bloody lip. Let's break his legs if we have to save New York and L.A. But, oh, here I am, Bart the Torturer again. Why can't I learn? I guess I'm just like O'Reilly. I'm just like Rush. I'm just like Bush. I'm their twin. I'm their clone. Yakety, 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 yakety. You know I'm a liberal. But when you hug that wall all the way on the left, when you go 10,000 miles to the left, that means the voters are 10,000 miles to your right. And you're going to lose that election, and you're going to lose that election with dignity. Oh, how nice. The bad guys control the White House, the Senate, the press, the courts, the military. But we have our dignity. Oh, I love having dignity in the loser's column.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock that night.
Global warming. What are the facts? To get some straight answers, this reporter unfortunately came to Washington, D.C. Yes, under this dome, I interviewed four prominent, obscure Republican congressmen. Their heads filled with talking points, their bellies filled with pure grain alcohol.
Well, the way we look at it is that sometimes the liberals overreact on things. The sky's always falling, or in this case, heating up.
So you think there are some extremists?
We got to follow good science, not junk science.
Right.
And I think rather than committing ourselves to huge amounts of money, we ought to know what we're talking about.
Global warming, I think, you know, maybe it was made up by overeager scientists, you know, the same scientists maybe that made up things like evolution and gravity. Cuckoo, right? Now you guys call it climate change, right? Because global warming, I mean, that's icky, right?
The climate gets warmer, it gets cooler, and we've got 2 million years of history that demonstrate.
It's true. There have been other periods of temperature change. For example, you got elected and hell froze over.
Well, the issue is, what is it that man is doing? And that's where we say we want sound science. We want to know that whatever remedies that we produce out of Congress are actually going to work.
Good answers. Very good. I see Karl Rove has trained you well. Tell me, does he use treats or a rolled up newspaper? You should support global warming with that hair. All the aerosol you use has probably heated up Alaska by now. Now, sound science.
You can go back on the hot plate.
No, you made the point. There's no sound science that absolutely confirms global warming. I mean, we really need to have some kind of overwhelming evidence, don't you think? Something like maybe a city underwater, something like that.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring ting tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
outside the snow is falling.
Hey, Mark, this is your longtime fan and correspondent, Biff. I just want to say that keep up the good work, and I love what you're doing on the website. Even though I'm not a liberal, I am a libertarian, so yes, I choose reality. Keep up the good work, and lots of props from your people in Tulsa, and Shirley Manson is still and always will be hot. Thank you.
Mark, keep up the good work. You have been a beacon and a light shining on the hill. God bless you, and may God bless America in the real way, and hopefully we can get this country back to the way that it was supposed to be. Swing the big hammer. John Henry beat the machine. Good night, good luck, and God riddance to the Bush bastards.
Hey there, Bart. I was just listening to your little piece on Ramsey Clark. And I agree, the dude's, I don't know, sort of off the deep left end. But I'm not sure I agree with your assessment. Simply because I don't think Ramsey Clark represents Democrats. He represents himself. In a way, Ramsey Clark is actually helping to show the Islamic world how the rule of law works. Do you see anybody defending Saddam besides Iraqis? I don't. And I think Ramsey Clark is trying to demonstrate that we do abide by the rule of law. A great example of this is the Nazis. The Nazis were put on trial. The Nazis went before a court, just like Saddam is doing right now. And some people represented them. So far from being a, I don't know, a Looney Tune, perhaps Clark is trying to show us all what it's what it really is we're trying to achieve over there. That's my little piece. Thanks, Bart.
In a way, you're kind of right, but Ramsey Clark did work for a Democratic administration. And on top of that, whether it's true or not, you got Rush and Hannity and O'Reilly and everybody screaming, there go the liberals again. This is what Democrats stand for. Let's go hug and kiss Saddam. Let's go hug and kiss Milosevic. Let's go hug and kiss that guy who murdered all the people in Rwanda. That's what the Democrats are. Oh, love and kisses for the dictators. Love and kisses for the murderers. Love and kisses for the genocide. Whereas Bush is trying to stop them. Where Bush is trying to make things better. And here the Democrats are helping the bad. I mean, this is what we have. And I don't think it's Ramsey Clark's responsibility to prove to the Arabs what Bush is truly trying to do. Why didn't Bush prove that? If Bush can't make his case, well, maybe Bush is not there to help. It just seems like Ramsey Clark is throwing Democrats on the grenade to save Bush. I think he ought to stay the hell out of it. But we each have opinions. What the hell?
Here comes Santa Claus. Here comes Santa Claus. Right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen and all his reindeers pulling on the rein. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Now listen, children, here comes.
When I go to a concert and the bands don't sing their hits, especially with the ridiculous ticket prices they're asking, I'll give you a few examples. I went to see Oasis open for the Black Crowes, and Oasis didn't even sing Wonderwall. I was like, dude, you guys got two hits, all right? Find them. You got 45 minutes. Do them both twice. I don't give a but do them at least once, all right? And then there were the Black Crowes. That stoner singer comes out for an hour before I heard one recognizable note. And then he finally goes, and we just wanted to jam tonight. Dude, jam in your garage. All right, how about that? Then do the set list I faxed you. And guess what? There's some hits on it. Yeah, too bad. Do it. Telling you. Drives me nuts. My buddy asked me to see George Thorogood, and I go, I don't know. I mean, he's good, but he's not going to do the stuff I like. And he's going to want to riff and jam and blues, and every song ends with, bow, wow, wow, f*** off. It's one two-hour song. I can't take it. That's why I like REO Speedwagon. They close with Riding the Storm Out. They don't want to, but they do it. Because they get it, all right? And it's a little embarrassing. That singer pulls a little wagon out with the siren on it. Riding the storm around, laying for the thought. He kind of walks through it, but I'm like, yeah, I know this one. But then you get the Rod Stewarts or the Stones, the old bands that throw you a medley crumb to shut you up. You get 4 bars of brown sugar to make room for every piece of crap off the new album. Might as well call the new album Beer Run, because that's where I'm going, all right? Not kidding. I took my mom to see Chicago. Chicago, the band, it was good, but I can't recognize them anymore. It's like 3 guys from Chicago, 2 guys from Los Lobos, and a contest winner. Come on. That's not what I came to see. It's not the same, right? Willie Nelson was great. Tons of hits. Problem is, he's got his friends and family in the band. Not all super talents like Willie. He's got his third cousin. He's playing the rain stick. You know what that is? This thing from the nature store. All right, this is the guy that can't handle the complexities of the tambourine. So he's out there like this. And if it's in any song, he's like, on the road again, just came with... Music with my friend. I can't wait. I'm like, dude, he thinks he's Hendrix. I go, buddy, it's dried up lima beans and a piece of driftwood, all right? You're not Clapton. Let's tone it down about 1,000,000,000%. Even Paul McCartney, the king, woke up the astronauts in the space station with a song, all right? Never been done in history, and he has the balls to hit him with some turd off the new album, all right? These people are in a contained space, Paul. They can't make a beer run, okay? You see him looking out the window for some space snack bar. It was hard to watch. They're thinking, this guy's got 400 hits, and he's giving us the new stuff? Where's the eject button? All right, Paul, just sing something from the Beatles and make it sound like it does in the albums. No tricks. I don't want the acoustic version. I don't want any bongo shit, all right? I want you to make it sound like I'm in my car listening to my CD. Because if I sing along and f*** it up, I'm mad at you, old man, all right? There, I said it.
Better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Yes, he's coming.
Well, there you had it. Show 86 is in the can. I hope you liked it. It's a little different than some shows in that I didn't put any of the music in here. Well, except for one little thing that I buried deep, deep inside where Tommy couldn't find it. Otherwise, all the music is all Tommy Mac, so he gets all the credit or the blame. Like to thank him for his hard work. Like to thank Tally in case she puts in something. See, what I do, I put together parts of the show, and it's not real good. And then I ship it to Tommy, and he makes it all better. And he ships it back, and it's like, damn, look at me. So, like to thank him, like to thank her, like to thank you. You're the subscriber, you're the listener, you're the one that makes it all happen. You are the actual producers of the show. Tommy just turns the knobs. Also like to thank the people who drop the occasional check in the mail, because that does not belong to Caesar. I get to keep that. Thank you for those. So, I'll get to work on show 87. I want everybody out there to have that Merry Christmas. And if you tell someone Happy Holidays and they tell you Merry Christmas, asshole, kick their ass. I'll go $100 towards your bail. What the hell? So have a good one. Ho, ho, ho. Happy New Year. And I will see you in show 87. I'm Bart in Tulsa, and I'm out of here.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and the days of old lang syne? For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for the sake of old lang syne.